And we're back with the Aviation Journalist Roundtable. That's Mac McClellan there from Flying Magazine and Tom Haynes of AOPA Pilot. Glad to have you both back. AOPA 70 this year. What are some of the celebrations you've been participating in?
Well, we've had some special content in the magazine in celebration of the association's 70th. We had some staff events where we had, birthday cake for the association. And lots of things going on in our AOPA Aviation Summit, the first weekend in November down in Tampa. We'll also have some special events acknowledging the association's past and also looking forward, too.
And we had Craig Fuller on the air a little bit earlier, and we'll be airing the Aviation Summit between AOPA, EAA, and I believe GAMA also participated in that summit. So there's a little bit of additional cooperation amongst the GA groups as far as lobbying and keeping priorities in Washington.
Yeah, it's great news. For all of us who work at AOPA, the idea that we can collaborate so closely with all the expertise that EAA has on so many issues is really welcome after many years where there wasn't a lot of communication there. So we welcome the opportunity to get together and all of us be more effective and sort of harness all the resources that we have to help advance general aviation sort of across the spectrum from kit builds all the way up through business aircraft.
I'm kind of surprised, though, because I didn't think there was that, but I'm not suggesting this, but there was animosity between the two groups. But I always assumed that there was close cooperation on a number of things. And I think the first time I noticed there was close cooperation was when Migs Field was torn up, and it was just kind of a lockstep working together, coordination of messages and everything to the media. And I guess I'd always assumed that there was some pretty close working together between the two groups.
Certainly it happened from time to time on big issues like that, but on a day-to-day basis, there just wasn't animosity. It was just somewhat of a competitive nature, but also it was just everybody had sort of their own agendas, and people didn't necessarily on a day-to-day basis or issue-by-issue basis get together and sort of compare notes and look at how we might work together. And you're going to see a lot more of that happening in the coming months.
So you both established embassies at each office.
Yeah, something like that.
Consulates
yeah,
and everything else.
Yeah. Little D.C. here in Oshkosh.
Mac, you're flying a magazine booth, or it's a lot bigger than a booth, but your merchandise tent has moved to a new spot here on the grounds.
Yeah, it's moved from near Aerocell Square down to near the original gate, the Arch Gate, I believe we're calling it, or the Brown Gate. I've lost track, but the one we all remember with the arches and the flags. And it's part of the entire reconfiguration of the showgrounds, which I think is great. I think it's much more effective. It's increased the exhibit area, easier to get around. And from the exhibitors I've spoken with, everyone so far is pleased with the new design.
I would say that certainly the traffic design, I have never moved with so much ease with my car around the convention area this year. And I think the pedestrians are much happier, too. The one thing I did notice is I arrived up for an early work party, I'd say in May, and they were just finishing the destruction of the old tower. And, of course, the hill was sort of kind of there. But within a month, came back, and they had completely leveled and flattened that area, and there was grass already reseated there like it was never there in the first place. Mm. And I thought, for a lot of people, they waxed pretty poetic about the tower and what it meant to them over the years, and how the iconic nature of that. I'm surprised that something different wasn't done with that.
I'm not sure that there was ever any thought of preserving it. Certainly the FAA was done with it and had no use. And the hill disappearing really shocked me. I mean, when I saw that was gone, and the old tower had been the orientation point for so many decades. And now the new tower is even taller, so it's going to serve that function. And the design of the streets and pathways is so much more logical. I'm sure we're all getting around quite well without the old tower, even though we miss it.
One last point about this. One of the people we camp with realized the exact spot that they're in the campground, they get hit with the beacon at night. So that is an additional challenge for them. When we went to break, we were talking about Randy Babb, and we haven't really gone into more about some of the priorities that Randy Babbitt should focus on and what is the overarching strategy that the new administrator should have? Pressing issues, or not, I should say pressing issues, but some of the first things that Randy Babbitt should consider in taking office, other than getting embossed business cards. Tom?
Well, as I said earlier, I think he's heard virtually directly from the president's lips that solving the controller situation and getting that in order and moving forward on next gen, the next generation of air traffic control system, are definitely priorities for the FAA. There are a lot of other things, obviously, that they're working on, rewriting some of the training regulations, rewriting some of the aircraft certification regulations, and then the usual cadre of airport issues and airspace stuff and that sort of thing. But definitely airspace modernization or air traffic modernization is got to be a key, and I think they've heard that loud and clear.
How much is the administrator going to be involved in user fees, or is that more of a fight in the legislative and executive branch?
It's actually principally in the legislative branch. It hasn't happened yet that I know of, but the executive could propose an FAA budget that included specific user fees.
I was just kind of curious exactly. I'm more trying to get my hands around the exact power of the FAA administrator. What aspect of aviation alone is a political football amongst bigger forces?
I think where the FAA is essentially unchallenged, except perhaps by getting advice from the NTSB, is in the specific design and regulation of airplanes themselves. It's become clear to almost everyone in the industry that a single rule that covers the very lightest piston single now goes all the way up to, say, the CJ4, the Phenom 300, which are jets closing in on 20,000 pounds maximum takeoff weight. Clearly, for one rule to be applicable and effective to that span is becoming impossible. And so the various alphabet groups and others are getting together to discuss with the FAA how we can bring logic from that rule, which seems to be serving the jet end very well. That, no question, the Part 23 turbines are very efficient and effective airplanes, but it's becoming quite a burden on the other end in stifling new designs and improvements in existing designs.
And in the past, how reactive or ahead of the game has the FAA been in some of these emerging areas? The most recent ones being like light jets and a fractional operations. That is the buying shares of airplanes. You know, some of the different regulatory changes might have been warranted. Has the FAA been slow to kind of adapt to that, or do they need to be slow to kind of see how this particular aspect evolves, Tom?
Well, again, it's kind of a mixed bag. There are some issues where the FAA has actually been ahead of the industry, one of them being WAAS approaches, which they developed way more quickly than most of us had anticipated, and at a time when there weren't very many GPS boxes converted to had the WAAS upgrade, there were actually approaches out there faster than many anticipated. So there's one situation ahead of the game. But there's certainly been others, particularly dealing with software issues in some of these advanced cockpits where the FAA was quite slow in developing the expertise within the organization to be able to assess the level of safety that was required in the software, and it was frustrating to the avionics manufacturers because they just didn't have anybody at the FAA who really understood what was necessary. I understand that's been improved in the last couple of years, but that's an example of the FAA being behind the power curve on an issue that was very important for advancing the avionics. The cockpits.
Their medical and certification branches, though, I've been impressed with their online interactivity, especially with preparing your medical certificate before you go into your doctor, and that is expedited quite a bit. And also, unfortunately, the number of times that I've lost my wallet and needed a new certificate, a medical and a license, and they've certainly been ahead on that one.
Yeah, that's a huge improvement in able to make those registration kinds of services available online. I think in general, though, when it comes to aircraft and operational issues, the FAA tends to be more reactive than proactive. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because the way in an airplane, for example, the certification works is they don't design the airplane for you. They don't tell you what you can and can't do. It's more like, tell us what you want to do and we'll see how it fits in the rules. And I think that attitude extends into most other areas. The industry and pilots and other people active need to make proposals and keep the pressure on the FAA to get the changes they want.
Coming back after a break, you're listening to EAA Radio.